on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have Ryan come up and tell our joke. Hey, Ryan.
All right, so this is seasonal. Why did the pilgrim go to the AA meeting? Because he hit Plymouth rock bottom.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Fred. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get reconnected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Scott to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Good evening. I'm Scott. I'm an alcoholic. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first priority gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the experience long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Please refrain from disturbing others or talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode or just turn it off. So I believe this is the sixth or seventh week. I don't know where we're at, but I know that Pat brings it to the table every time. So welcome, Pat.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat. And thanks to 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, outlined in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that, I am forever grateful. AA didn't just save my life, but it gave me a new life worth living, and I absolutely love recovery. I love my life. I'm so blessed, and I'm blessed to be here. I love this group. And yeah, I just turned around and asked these guys, what week is this? Because like I'm still around four, and you guys are at six. And that's and probably got some catching up to do here somewhere along the line. But it's, but you know, there's just so much to talk about in this fourth step. Because this is, to me, this is the leap. This is where you take the jump. This is where you choose in. You know, this is where like the freedom comes from. It's where the work starts, but this is where the freedom, this is where you grab the life preserver, right? I mean, this is in chapter two, at the end of chapter two, they talk about we're like drowning men who grab that life preserver, you know, that the desperation of drowning men who finally grab it. And this is it. This is the life preserver because I'm killing myself internally. I mean, that's just my experience is that my illness, alcoholism, you know, look, my alcohol use and my alcoholism like manifests itself in different ways. I mean, I've suffered from alcoholism since I was five. You know, I mean, that's only because that's all how far back I can remember. You know, I mean, I've had nightmares before that. I mean, weird stuff. You know, but my alcoholism has manifested itself in fear and anxiety and anger and resentment and all my life. I mean, I was never free. And I've shared with you guys many times that alcohol was not my problem. Alcohol was my solution to my alcoholism. You know, and that's a problem, especially when you can't moderate, you know, or stay stopped, you know, given good reason too. I mean, you know, like losing families and jobs and careers and freedom, you know, given good reason and not being able to stay stopped. But that being the only solution I had to the way I felt, I didn't know what else to do because I'm suicidal without it, you know. And that's the desperation that I felt when I got here, that you took away my meds. You took away my solution. That alcohol and those other substances that I'd experimented with, you know, how do I live now? I don't know how to deal with that stuff. And this was the life preserver. Step four was the life preserver for me. Because 1, 2, and 3 wasn't getting it. You know, when you guys told me, turn it over, I'm like, what? Turn it over? Shut it off? Is that what you're telling me to do? Shut the voices off? Stop feeling the way you feel? How many parents have said that to you? Well, you shouldn't feel that way. Yeah, you know, like, well, I do. You know, well, now, what does that mean? Just stop feeling that way? I don't know how to do that. I know how to stop feeling that way. 3 drinks. Okay? I know how to stop feeling that because I get that, yes, you know. Now, if I could have stopped there, I found the sweet spot. If I could have just stopped there, it would have been fine. All right, 3, 6. All right, 6 is where it really started to happen for me, and I really started to feel myself, and, you know, I became Travolta, and you know, I got to start changing that, right? Because if somebody came up to me and said, you mean that fat guy, that John Travolta, that fat old guy? I'm like, no, Travolta was hot. You know, you got to go back to the set. You got to watch Saturday Night Fever or something, man. Because Travolta was the man. I mean, he was like, I guess I got to change it to like Timberlake or something. Bruno, something. Getting old, man, that's what it is. But this is to me, you know, it's just, and that is, as a sponsor, that's the challenge, isn't it? I mean, people who sponsor a lot of people, and I sponsor a lot of guys, that's the challenge, to get them to engage in this process, to get them to start writing, you know, and they just, this is my deal, this is my response all the time, and guys that I sponsor know, they're just sick of hearing it, you know, that, and they would tell me, like, oh, you won't believe what they did at work today, and I go, man, you're not going to believe how much an inventory is going to help with that, you know? No, listen to me. Let me tell you what they did today. You know, the guy, I'm supposed to do this job. I had somebody else come in and do the job, told me to go do something else. I'm not good at that. And I go, man, you're not going to believe how much an inventory is going to help with that. You know, and that's my answer, because I don't know what's good for you. I don't know. One of my favorite stories in the book, it used to be Doctor Addict Alcoholic, but we had to be politically correct and change it to acceptance is the answer, because we don't talk about drugs here. You know, unless you're Bill Wilson. Page 7, I think. That's what landed his ass in treatment. But, you know, Dr. Paul Orlando talks about, you know, that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought it was the worst day of my life, right? And a lot of us feel that way. I couldn't feel, like, I'm feeling like I can't believe I ended up here, you know, with you losers, you know? And I felt that way. I really did. Like, this can't be my life now, you know? And Paul says the same thing. I thought it was the worst day of my life. And then he goes, it turns out to be the best day of my life. It turns out that it was the best day of my life. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, which goes to show you that I don't know what's good for me. So if I don't know what's good for me, how in the hell am I going to know what's good for you? Right. And so I'm asked advice all the time from, you know, what do I do about it? What do I do about it? You're not going to believe how much an inventory is going to help with that, you know, because that's what it becomes. This becomes a life of self-examination. That, I mean, I can't talk enough about this step. And that's probably why I'm on 4 and we're on week 6, you know, but we'll catch up. Yeah. And so this is where the change starts. This is where the personality change starts. And once you engage here, you're off to the races. I mean, we start to see what's blocking me from the solution here. But it's a leap of faith. It's a leap of faith, especially I come in here the practicing agnostic, you know. I mean, I'm not the true atheist, but look, you know, to maintain my solution, I had to give up some spiritual principles. You know, I had to, my moral decline, as I got more into alcohol and drugs, my morals started to decline also. And at some point, I had to deny the existence of all that stuff because I couldn't live up to it. You know? And so I come in here the agnostic. You know? And even if I did believe, no God would want to have a relationship with somebody like me. You know? And so it's a leap of faith to think that, and the book says it, that these drastic proposals would bring that light into my life, would bring that freedom into my life. And it's, you know, a design for living. Right after it talks about the light preserver, they talk about a design for living that really works. This is going to become the design for living. You know, self-examination, confession, repentance, restitution. You know, this constant step process, constant process that's going to eliminate in my life what is killing me, absolutely killing me. I can't just not drink because I can't stand the way I feel. And I can't stand it for one more effing second. And I forget. And look, and not that I just, sometimes I forget. Sometimes I don't care. At least that's what I say. You know, if you drink, you're going to jail. I don't care. Yeah, I did. You know, I mean, but that's what I would say. You know, I'm leaving if you pick up another drink. Yeah, I know. I don't care. You know. And then she'd leave, and then I'd put a gun to my head. You know, and it's like, I did care. But the thing is, regardless of the consequences that were going to happen, I couldn't stay stopped. I could not live with the way I felt. And, you know, I don't know if everybody relates. I don't know if everybody's alcoholism manifests itself in that area or not. I don't know. You know, but I needed something that was going to eliminate conflict within myself. I was in conflict totally. Conflict with me, conflict with you, conflict with God. I was just conflicted. And this started to relieve that. I started to have, they talk about that spiritual experience, that spiritual awakening, that personality change. I started to have it right here in 4. Man, it gave me tools. And it all happens in that fourth column, in that fourth step. You know, why am I pissed off at the world? You know, I was talking last night, doing a meeting, I don't know where we're at. We're just finishing There's a Solution, starting more about alcoholism. We're talking about, you know, if everybody's effing with you all day, it ain't them. You know what I mean? Like, if everybody's driving like an asshole, it's not them. You know? If you're married three indoors 3 times, it ain't her. You know, it ain't him. You don't get along with anybody at work, it's not them. You know? It's me. I'm in conflict. And to see the truth in that, to analyze that and see the truth in that, you know, why am I angry? Who is it? Why is it? What part of me is affected, which is the only thing that matters, which is the only thing that ends up mattering? How was I affected? That's all I ever cared about. How does this affect me? Didn't matter what your name was. I mean, on the fourth step, it did. But in reality, it didn't matter what your name was. It didn't matter who it was. It was what you did to me. And you know what? Truth was, it didn't even matter what you did to me. It was how I was affected. Taking something I got, not giving me something I want. You know, not feeding those instinctual drives in some way, shape, or form. But that fourth column is where the freedom came. What's the energy? What am I doing to set this ball rolling? For the first time in my life, I take a look at me. Instead of focusing on what you're doing to me, look at me. Where am I at wrong? Where am I setting this ball rolling? Where am I at fault? What did I do? And if you're not sure, pretend you're doing their inventory. Put your name on their inventory. See what they might put in the second column. Right? Your ex-wife, put your name in the first column on her inventory. You know, I'm pissed off at Pat. Why? Oh, that bastard. You know that. You know, and I start seeing the truth. I start seeing it from a different angle. And that's what the fourth step says in resentments, right? We start looking at it from a different angle. And we start to have a spiritual experience. We start to have a spiritual awakening. Our personality starts to change because we see the truth. Not only do we see the truth, we see the energy behind what we're doing. We see that it's fear-based. We see that it's selfish. We see that it was dishonest. We see the energy behind what I was doing, behind those instinctual drives. What's the energy behind that sex instinct? What's the energy behind that security instinct? What's the energy behind that social instinct? Dishonesty, selfishness, inconsideration? Yeah, all of it. All of it. Yeah. And we start to look at it. And I started to have, and I shared with this last week, I started to have this experience where I all of a sudden, how can I be helpful? It changed. My attitude changed. Why is she so angry? Why are they so angry? I do that with customers all the time. you know, I wonder what's going on in their life. That, you know, what's, you know, maybe ask them, are they okay? You know, anything I can do to help? You know? And you, they open up, and you know what? It doesn't even become about, the last thing I want to talk about at work is what I'm doing for work. You know, what I want to talk about is what's going on in your life, and I can share what's going on in my life. That's what I want to talk about. You know, and be helpful to somebody, maybe free somebody, give them a chance to smile for a while. That's the experience. That's what started to happen to me. And one thing I wanted to touch on, which I forgot to touch on last week, was that my father was on that list, on my resentment list. And I didn't feel, I felt like a victim still after that. And look, children are not responsible for what adults do. You know, my dad left at 5, left my mother with 4 kids, never paid a dime of child support. We were on welfare most of our lives, and I'm not, that's not why I'm an alcoholic, you know. I could say that, but that's not why I'm an alcoholic. You know? That's why I needed a drink, but it's not why I'm an alcoholic. And I had to look at the truth in that. And, you know, I used to tell the story, and I told you the story about my dad beating up my mother in front of us kids, which is true. But I told that story like it happened every night, you know, because I wanted some pity. I wanted you to say, oh, that's terrible, you know, that, you poor thing, you know. And so I actually exaggerated what took place. My dad didn't beat up my mom every night, but the one time it happens, I'll never forget it, you know. And it was more than once, but it wasn't every night, but I make you think it's every night. And the truth is, we're going to talk about that, and I'll talk more about that when we get into 8 and 9. Because if I don't find a way to forgive him or understand him, not condone, but understand what took place in his life, I'll never be free. You know, I'll end up letting him run my life, because that's what these resentments were doing. They were running my life. They were dictating how I felt. Some of them dictated where I went. I'm not going to that party. He's there. You know, I'm not going to that family reunion because so-and-so is there. You know, they ran my life. They literally ran my life. And I started to look at him as a different play, in a different way. Like, somebody asked me once, didn't your dad teach you anything? And I thought about it for a second, and I said, man, we have work ethics like nobody does. My dad had work ethics. My dad was a hard-working guy. And I worked with him as a child. Like, when he came into our lives, I would work for them. And he taught me, my brother, work ethics that very few people have. And we're known for it. I mean, like, my sons are the same way, and I'm not going to tell you my age, but I'm getting up there, and I blow these young guys away at work. I blow them. I make more money than any of them make, and we're all commissioned, you know. And it's physical, you know. But that's just the way I was brought up. And so I had to start looking at some of the things that my dad did positive in our lives. And later we'll talk about I started to wonder, why is he like that? Why is he incapable of having healthy relationships like me? Yeah, right? Now, when we start praying for people, when we talked about that last week, the God in me connects with the God in them. The spirit in me connects with the spirit in them, and all of a sudden I want to understand. I don't want to resent. I want to understand, and then I wonder if I can be helpful. Now, that hasn't happened in his case because he's one of us. He tells me when you decide to take a drink, we'll get together. That's where he's at, you know. But that's, and we'll talk about that later. But you know, we're getting free. I start to replace resentment and anger with love and patience and tolerance and some understanding and some helpfulness through prayer. We're given a new tool. It's not a drink now. It's a prayer. You know, you don't hear much about it here anymore. But man, when I was coming through AA in the early 90s, the acceptance prayer was everywhere. And that comes out of Paul O's story also, Dr. Attica, Acceptance is the Answer. You know, 417. It was 449 before. Now it's 417. And that pamphlet, that acceptance pamphlet, was everywhere. You know, that was like, I lived by that pamphlet. If it wasn't for that pamphlet, I don't think I'd be here today. You know, nothing, absolutely nothing in God's world is by mistake. Right? That everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. Now, that's a tough sell when you first get here, right? And we only see that in the rearview mirror, right? We only see that looking back. Because I look back now and I go, oh my God, if everything didn't happen just the way it did, I wouldn't be here today and have the life that I have today. It had to work. Everything had to happen exactly the way it did. If it's tweaked any other way, I'm not here with the spirit that I have acquired during this program. I'm not with the wife that I am today that I love dearly. You know, I don't have the relationship I have with my kids. Now, I'm not happy about the wake that I left behind me, you know, because there was a little bit of a wake there. There was some people who were in the way, you know, and unfortunately got in the way. And that's sad, you know, that we affect people in a negative way. But then he goes on to say that it's not about what needs to be changed in the world and the people around me. It's what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes towards it. Perception. Disease of perception. Clancy's my favorite talk of Clancy's. You know? Disease of perception. And I start, we're getting free here. We're absolutely getting free. I begin to have an outlet other than alcohol and drugs. And it's called prayer. And fear is the same way. Fear is the demon in my life. Fear has always been that, Bill says it's the underlying thread. It's underneath everything. It's the motive behind everything. Even my resentments and my anger are fear-based. Yeah. And it gives us the same thing with the fear. Instead of asking for the fear to be removed, we pray to be able to walk through the fear. You know, courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to walk through it. And now instead of having a drink and walking through it, I pray. I have a power greater than myself in my life today. I don't have to drink over it anymore. You know, and I'm not going to go down that sex road again, so don't get excited. But but I want to say that I don't even look at that as a sex inventory. When me and my guys do that, it's a relationship inventory. It's in pursuit of. Who did I hurt in pursuit of relationships? Who did I hurt in pursuit of sex relationships? I hurt a lot of people that I never had sex with. Yeah. In pursuit of sex, I hurt the people that I should have been having sex with. Yeah. I've hurt children along the way in pursuit of sex. I've hurt people, married people in other relationships in pursuit of sex relations. So it is not about who I had sex with. It's about in my pursuit of relationships, who did I hurt? Yeah. And one thing I didn't touch on last week before we move off of this four-step thing is that three times in the fourth step, Bill refers to being willing to make amends to the people we've harmed. Three times he mentions it. He's setting us up for step 8 and step 4 all through that conversation. We get willing to straighten out the past. We get willing to make amends to the people that we have hurt. Right? Where I'm making a case that he wants another list. You know, and Charlie Parmalee, who was my mentor, created a list called Other Harms Other Than Sexual, Other Than Relational, Other Harms. So that we can get clear of all of the things that we've done. And it includes financial harms. It includes hit and runs, which I had a lot of. And we become willing. We put another list together of student loans, people we borrowed money from we didn't pay back, people's houses we broke in and stole stuff. I sideswiped a whole city block one time. It was like a curb feeler. We put those on the list, and we just get willing. We get clear on everybody we've harmed, and then we're able to move on into the fifth step. And Bill reminds us immediately why we're doing this. Because I think sometimes we lose focus on that, right? That we're trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. That's what this has all been about. Right? Finding a power greater than us that will solve our problem. What are we going to do about our problem? Nothing. We can't. That's probably one of the big lies in the book, right? In the first paragraph of There's a Solution, what's it say? They have solved their problem. They didn't do jack. Right? If they could have solved their problem, they wouldn't be here. But I don't think he wants to break the news to us yet, you know, that you're not going to be able to solve your problem. Because a couple chapters later, he says, lack of power, that was your dilemma. This book's all about finding a power that's going to solve your problem. It says you're not going to do anything about it. They took him a couple chapters to break that news to us. First, he had to give us some information to convince us that we needed a power greater than human power. But this whole thing, and I kind of lost sight of it in the fourth step. You know, it was all about a decision to seek a power that was going to solve my problem. And then I got caught up in this wave, in this fourth step of this self-examination, sometimes self-loathing. Sometimes it turns into that. And look, if you got a sponsee that has very low self-esteem, put an asset list together. That's 12 and 12 stuff right there, right? Have them put an asset list together, too. Bring up that self-esteem a little bit. There are some things we did right. It's just not blocking me from the sunlight. It's not blocking me from my relationship. It's the things I'm doing wrong that are blocking me from the relationship. But there's nothing wrong with taking a positive inventory. You know, if you got somebody that's really going deep and having a problem with the fourth step, have them put an asset list together. Start writing some good things about themselves. But we lost track. He has to remind us into action. In the first prayer, he has to remind us why we're doing this. We're doing this because it's a program of subtraction. It's about eliminating the things that are blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I came in here with everything I needed, the God within, deep down within every one of us, the fundamental idea of God. I need to remove the things that are blocking me from that sunlight. And that's what this is all about, is establishing a relationship with the God of my understanding, with my own conception of God. And this is where we get right. This is where and that step's pretty specific. We admit to God forgiveness, to ourselves, some understanding of ourselves, and to another human being for some direction, and maybe another set of eyes, another viewpoint on what was going on there. Because I desperately needed forgiveness and understanding, you know, and I definitely needed some new direction. It's really a check and balance, right? Are you accurate in what you wrote? Because I wrote, you know, I went out with so-and-so, and I was married, and I was trying to satisfy the sex instinct. That wasn't the sex instinct. My response, that ain't that. Did you have sex with her? No. What were you doing? Man, you were just trying to impress your friends. That's social instinct right there. Yeah. Well, you were afraid the wife, didn't your wife say she was leaving you? I saw that on your porch, it said she was leaving you. Well, it's security instinct. You're afraid if she's going to leave, you're going to have somebody in the wings. You know, just getting clear on what I wrote. Give me another more perception on what was going on there. Tell you the truth, this is the step I was afraid of. I wasn't afraid of four. I was afraid of five. You know, and I think a lot of people do that because we look ahead. I looked ahead. Shit, confession. That's restitution, Jesus. Yeah. I don't know. But I was desperate. I was the guy grabbing the life preserver. And that's why step one is so critical here. Because who would want to do a fourth and fifth step unless they had to? Who would want to? Who would want to confess their shortcomings unless they had to? I didn't. Yeah. But I was desperate. I was the guy grabbing that life preserver. You know, throw me the life preserver. Throw me something. Because I can't do this. I cannot do this. I cannot stay stopped. I knew it. That facing defeat and admitting defeat is so important. And nobody would do this unless they admit defeat. Yeah. And at that point, I don't even think you have to believe. Be willing to believe that we're right. Be willing to believe that we could be right. What do you got to lose? You're going to go back to drinking. What do you really got to lose? We're like the last house on the block. We can't even refer you to anybody from here. You know, I mean, you've already been to the psychologist and the psychiatrist and church and all that other. Where do we send you from here? The asylum? You know, I mean, there's just nowhere to refer you to anymore. Well, I don't know what to tell you, you know. And maybe, you know, like most of us, we tried something else before we got here. You know, and our book says, look, if you think you can do it another way, have at it. Go do it. We're not promoting anything here. If you're not one of us, we don't want you here, honestly. You know, I mean, I hate to be blunt, but I don't want a non-alcoholic raising their hand for sponsorship. I don't want somebody who has been able to do this on willpower raise their hand and sponsor somebody that can't. That didn't need a spiritual experience. You know, you're welcome. You can drink the coffee. Just shut up. Don't share and don't put your freaking hand up, you know? I mean, that's all. Yeah. This is for people who couldn't do that, right? I mean, that's kind of a requirement. Like, it's not a requirement for membership, but it's a requirement for recovery from alcoholism and drug addiction. Yeah, I was afraid of five. And, you know, with the book, you remember when the book was written, there were no groups, and this book was going out as a 12-step call, and people were reading it and getting sober and starting groups. So, you know, Bill gives some suggestions as to who to do this with, and he runs out of suggestions at one point. But, you know, but it's vital that we do it. You know, this is where you're in. If you don't do this, you're not in. You know, this is the foundation of the program. What Bill, what's he saying? The first reason why you should do this is because you'll probably drink. Because you won't stay sober. Good reason. Yeah. But, I mean, he gives some great suggestions, which I heeded. You know, psychologist, psychiatrist, minister, pastor, priest, you know, somebody like that. I mean, I would just forget the next paragraph where it talks about parents or wives or friends and, you know. Look, nowadays we don't have to look for sponsorship. We have sponsorship here, but it's probably the right person to do it with. Yeah. But I struggled with that. You know, I don't trust you guys. I don't trust anybody. You know, and as much as I owe Brian my life for approaching me with the answer, armed with the facts about himself and this program, as much as I owe him my life, I didn't trust him. Hey, I used to sit at Denny's with you guys talking about the people in the meeting. And now you want me to share my fifth step with you? I don't think so. You know? And let me tell you, that's where gossip kills, by the way. It's where it absolutely kills. You know, if you're sitting at the Floridian talking about people, when you're not there, you know who they're talking about? Gossip kills here, man. It kills. It causes that kind of mistrust. You know? And that's, by the way, that fifth step is a sacred freaking trust. That is a sacred. If you violate that, you're useless here. You violate that, you're useless. That don't go away. I mean, I don't even share in a general way what guys have told me in their fifth step. Not even a general way. Because I don't ever want them to think that I would violate that. Yeah. Because, I mean, you can't sponsor anybody after. Once you get that label that you've shared somebody's fifth step in a meeting or with someone else, nobody's going to ask you to sponsor them. I do fifth steps with people I don't even sponsor because they know I have Alzheimer's or something. You know, you just can't remember shit, you know. You're like, you better remind me when you tell me the story a year later. Remember that story I told you my fifth step? Could you refresh my memory? Yeah, remember I was telling you about that wife? No, can you give me the whole story again? It's about them getting free. It's not, I don't have any terrific advice. I don't have any, you know, I can share my experience with you if I've had experience with it, but I can't tell you what to do. I can't run your life. You know, it's not relevant. The idea is to get free. That's the idea. And confession has been around for thousands of years. Every form of religion has it, whether it be restitution or confession or atonement, you know, call it what you want. You know, it's real, and that's why billions of people use it as a tool to get free. Yeah. And we're no different. Yeah. But I had a problem. I wasn't gonna share it. And I share with you guys. I had this tough love home group, these men's group that I was a part of, and they were in my face about getting it done. And those are the guys that told me how to behave in a meeting. He told me what this program was all about. You know, it wasn't about not drinking and going to Denny's. It was about getting through this work quickly, you know, and getting hooked up, getting engaged in the power that's going to, you know, solve your problem. I was going to meetings where they'd say shit like, I wish you a long, slow recovery, you know. That's called relapse. That's what that's called. That's called white knuckle shit, right? That's called hanging in there, you know? How you doing? You see them people all over the meeting, right? How you doing? Hanging in there. Yeah. They got a wrinkled ass forehead, you know. How you doing? I'm hanging in there, yeah. Four more hours, I'll have another 24, you know. Four meetings today. Called my sponsor six times, you know. But I'm going to get it one day at a time, right? That's not what this is about, man. This is about getting free. This is about living life.
you know, and I was still hanging in there at that point. You know, so these guys were on me about doing this fifth step, and so I decided to, I tell this story all the time, because it's just the way it happened for me, and I decided that I was going to call St. Andrew's Church in Coral Springs at 11 o'clock at night, and nobody would answer the phone, and then I would tell them the next morning, or the next day at the next Wednesday night meeting, that I tried to do it and nobody was home, and nobody answered the phone, and I called 11 o'clock at night, and Father Quinn picked up the phone. And I don't know why. I mean, how does that happen? You know, he just happened to be in the office in St. Andrews. And I said, my name is Pat, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, and you want to do a fifth step? He said, come on over here tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, be in my office, right? I didn't know it at the time, but the Coral Springs group had been meeting there for years. And he knew that if you were part of AA, what you wanted him for. You know, that was kind of like his job. He was hearing fifth steps constantly out of the groups around there. And I spent a little over 2 hours with him the next morning. And my life forever changed. It's a hard thing to explain. But I shared my fifth step with him. I did a confession with him. And, you know, I used to think it sounded silly, and I thought people would think it sounded silly, and I didn't share it at first, but later on, I heard Marty Mann's story a few years back, and Marty Mann had the same experience, first woman ever to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous permanently, and I heard her story, and she had the same exact experience, and then recently, my sponsor, who passed away almost 2 years ago, his wife had the same experience, and I walked out of that office, and I was looking around, and all I saw was bright green, like almost fluorescent green. You know what I mean? Like, wow, this is green, you know? And I thought it was my glasses, like playing a trick. I take my glasses. I'm going down the highway back to work. I'm going, damn, there are freaking green everywhere. There's trees everywhere. You know, I mean, it's like I thought there was something. I swear to God, I thought it was my sunglasses playing a trick on me or something, you know? And all I could see was, get chills. All I could see was this, like the blind seeing all of a sudden. You know, I mean, that's the only comparison I can say. Like, this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen, right? Now, I've been in Florida for 12 years. You know, I'm going, like, there's palm trees and shit, you know? Like, you know, I mean, I was just, I was excited. Like I can't believe this. And I'm coming home that night. I get on the Sawgrass, I go to pay the toll, and I'm looking, there's this gorgeous sunset out west. And I look at the lady at the toll booth, and I said, look at that. And she goes, what? And I said, look at that. And she said, she looked, she goes, it's a sunset. It's there every night. You know, now I've been driving it for 12 years. I never saw it. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. You talk about perception. I'm walking. I finally realized that I have been walking with my head down, staring at the concrete, never acknowledging anybody around me. You ever do that? Just walk by people. No how are you, no hello. If they did, I'd give them a head nod, you know. And it just never, I was just not part of life. I was just self-absorbed is what I was. I was sitting, when I was driving, I was seeing bumpers and asphalt. That was it. You know, I never looked around to see the green. I never looked around to see the beauty of the place. Look, I live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet. We do. People save all their lives to get here. And I live here. Like, all of a sudden, I'm realizing this. Like, this is paradise. And it really is a beautiful place. If I get out of myself, and all of a sudden I'm out of myself, you know, and I'm starting to experience something I'm starting to experience beauty in my life for the first time, you know. I'm sitting at lights, and I'm just staring at that one, because when that goes yellow, this one's going green, and I got places to be, and I'll be on the horn, because this guy, he's going to hesitate. He's probably texting up there, and, you know, I was self-absorbed, and I knew a couple things for sure that day, and one is that God is. And I'll tell you what, it was the God of my misunderstanding, I got to admit. I had my own conception was a God of love, a God of forgiveness, a God of mercy. That's how I described the God of my understanding. And it was, it was a misunderstanding or an understanding, call it what you want, but there was nothing specific, but I knew that something had just entered my heart that day and changed everything. Changed everything. God is. I would swear on a Bible that day that God is. And Bill knew that was going to happen. And that's why we're telling you that there is no second requirement in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new here, there's no belief requirement. There's no second requirement here for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there's some conditions to have a spiritual experience. One is, you know, facing defeat, admitting defeat, and then appealing to a power greater than human power to recover. I mean, that's kind of necessary for the experience. But there's only one requirement for membership here, and that's a desire to stop drinking. Because Bill knows that if you fall, and he uses words like precise, specific, exact, clear-cut directions, if you do that, you will get what everybody gets. And that's a transformation. That's a spiritual awakening. The personality change sufficient. That's our solution here. The great fact is just this is nothing less that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives. The central fact of my life today, that God has entered my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous and is commencing to do for me what I could not do for myself. And what couldn't I do for myself? I couldn't freaking stay stopped. Couldn't stay stopped. And all of a sudden the obsession is gone. I haven't had the obsession to drink since that day. I'm not telling you I haven't thought about it. But I knew that day that I would never drink or drug again. I knew it. Now, that's a crazy statement in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because I could be drunk later, right? If I stop working this thing. But I knew the fight was over, and it has been. Now, I'm not telling you I haven't thought about drinking. I have done some stuff that we were talking about before the meeting. There's a couple of things I never really talk about from the podium. One is what I do for a living, and the other is how much time I have. Very rare do you ever hear me say either one, because the time is not relevant. It's how well are you working this thing today? And I'm not one of them guys that thinks whoever got the most time is who got up earlier. I don't believe that shit either, but what I do believe is that what gives time credibility is that you've weathered storms. You know, your recovery has been defined, not tested. God doesn't test our recovery, reveals it. Doesn't test it, but reveals it. And it's revealed in the tragedies. It's revealed in the health issues. It's revealed when you lose your job. It's revealed when she says, I want a divorce. And I didn't drink over none of that stuff. And let me tell you something, that ain't me. That ain't me. You know, that is not me doing that, because I knew no other way to handle situations like that all my life than to drink. Because I've been an emotional cripple since as long back as I can remember. And the only way I ever coped was with some kind of mood and mind-altering substance. And it wasn't always alcohol and drugs. Sometimes it was a new car. Sometimes it was a new relationship. Sometimes it was whatever would change the way I felt. Spending spree. Go buy some new shit. You know, change the way I feel temporarily. God entered my heart that day. That's the promises in the fifth step are just incredible. And that's kind of why I opened this book. I'm actually going to read something out of the book. If I can. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. That's freaking incredible. That's exactly where I was with that. You know, that's exactly where I was with that. And I gotta confess something else. Is I held something back. I held something back. And most of us have that one thing, you know. That one dirty, nasty thing that we just aren't going to, we're going to take, the book 12-12 talks about taking that to our grave, you know, that one thing, and I had that one thing, that I just could not let go of. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I did not do my fifth step because of that one thing. So maybe I'm getting a little unorthodox here, but I'm just sharing my experience with you. Then I'm asking you that if you're new here and you have the one thing to do 4 and 5 anyway, because God will put somebody in your life like he did mine so that you can be free of that one thing. You know, and I'm grateful that I didn't hold back on working the program because I got involved in service. Because once you do 5, you're in. You know, we had a workshop. Tuesday nights we do a workshop. This Tuesday night was everybody that finished their 4th and 5th step raised their hand because we move on to 6, 7, 8, 9. We take people through the steps in 5 weeks, and which really equals 5 hours. Incredible, right? And not counting 4 and 5, right? That, I mean, we take our time. And because Bob used to do it in a half a day. You know, that's the way they did it back in the day. You know, what the hell was I talking about? So I hold this thing back. Oh, everybody put their hand up. Anybody did their fifth step? We had about a half a dozen guys and girls put their hand up, did their fifth step last month. Norm's been to that meeting. It's a great meeting. And welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're in. That's the foundation, right? That's the book says that. This is our foundation. Have we been thorough? Have we built the foundation without sand, right? Is it solid? Is our house built on a rock or is it built on sand? You've heard that before, right? That's out of a bigger book. Bill likes to go with those little comparisons, right? If we build on rock, how solid is our foundation? Because these are the 5 that you have to do to be a sponsor. 6 and 7, we're going to find out the rest of our lives we're going to be working on 6 and 7. 8 and 9, we're going to get started on it, work on that for the rest of our lives possibly, and then move into the design for living in 10, 11, and 12. These are the 5 that you got to do. This is the foundation. You're in. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when you talk about 6 and 7, it's aiming for perfection, but God help me get there because I'm falling short here and there. Yeah. But these are the 5 you got to do. But I want to tell you how I got free, right? The men's group, that I was a part of, was called Boca Boys Club. They met in Deerfield. They weren't all, it was just, I don't know why they call themselves the Boca Boys. They were meeting in Deerfield. And I think they were wannabes. And they moved to Boca. We were in the Barnett Bank at that time on Hillsborough Boulevard, across from the original Bottom Line. We moved to 441 and Glades, out that way. And when we moved there, we had a whole new kind of crowd of people come to that meeting. Right? And one of the guys that came, he had about 15 years sober. His name was Howard the Elder. I hope I never get that label. But Howard the Elder had a lot of time for that group, and Howard was asked to share his story because anniversary night we had a speaker. Howard shared my secret from the podium. Right? I was 5 years sober when that happened. Right? Howard shared my freaking secret from the podium. Howard became my sponsor for the next 13 years until I moved on, and we'll talk about that later, but I ended up moving away from that group, not for the wrong reason, but because I needed to grow, you know, and we'll talk about that when we get to 11. But I was able, after that meeting, to ask Howard to sponsor me and then get with Howard and share my secret with him and finally get free of it. So I'm saying, when I ask my guys, when the book says, were you thorough? Did you leave anything off? I ask them, and it's just because of my experience, did you do the best you can? Did you do the best you can at this time? Because God is running the show now, and you eventually will either get the courage to share it, or God will put the person in front of you to share that one dirty, nasty thing that you don't want to share with anybody. You know. But what it allowed me to do, because when somebody said, have you been through the steps? And I said, yes. It allowed me not only to sponsor people,
but it got me involved in service, and I was big into service. I was one of them guys that the spirituality came along slowly, but the service I dove into, and I chased people around this fellowship. I chased speakers, and I chased service, and I chased the functions and the gratitude dinners and the picnics, and that was just, I was all in. I was all in from that point on. Yeah. So I'm grateful that I did the best I could at that time. And so I was going to get to six tonight, but that ain't going to happen. But next week we will talk about that. Definitely the two steps that Bill added to the program. You know, we talk about the six-step program that Alcoholics Anonymous derive from the Oxford Group steps, the Oxford Group tenets, and we see them in the foreword to the second edition, the surrender, inventory, confession, restitution, helpfulness to others, and a belief and a dependence upon God. You know, we see the foundation of our steps in those tenets of the Oxford Group. There's actually 28 of those tenets that Bill pulled those six out of. And if you don't think there was ever, you know, I've heard people say, oh, there was never a six-step program. Page 263 in Earl Treat's story, he sold himself short, are the six steps. You know, and he says the six steps that Dr. Bob used to take 5,000 freaking guys through the steps, right? And so I kind of believe Earl that there was a six-step program, you know. And Bill needed to add to those. And six and seven were two of the ones that he added. Because without change, nothing is going to change. And there's no coincidence that these two steps are plugged in between four and five and eight and nine. Right? Because if we're going to go out and repair the damage done with the people that we have harmed, we better have some damn credibility when we do it. You know, we better have a demonstration of some kind of change in our attitude when we approach these people. There better be something different about our eyes, you know? And I love that when Bill says that about Abby Thatcher sitting across the table. There was something different about his eyes, right? We look different when we've had that experience. Our forehead unwrinkles, right? We have something in our eyes at that point. People see it. And that demonstration doesn't always have to come first, but boy, it means a lot more when you're making amends when that demonstration is there. And it doesn't have to be in the big stuff. It's just you show up and you're not a freaking taker anymore. You show up bringing something to the party instead of asking something at the party. And that was rare that I showed up to say hello to Mom and didn't ask for something. You know, and for me to show up in a different light was a spiritual experience in itself. You know, so there's no coincidence that the tools of change are plugged in between five and eight. You know, and we'll talk more about that next week. Thanks for letting me be here. My book is falling apart.
All right, let's thank Pat one more time. And let's have Ryan come do our secretary report.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Ryan.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Alex to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. So let's welcome Alex.
My name's Alex. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The alcoholic reaction to alcohol remains within us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940s-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? I'm going to raise my hand. Is there anyone here that needs a sponsor? If you could just raise your hand. So we got a girl up front here. If any of the ladies in the room can help bring her back to God, just talk to her after the meeting. Please join us Monday night's Big Book Study Meeting, where the book comes alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30. The Big Book Study starts at 7:15. And we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale in the back, along with some information about some opportunities coming up to do service and different other announcements. And some of them up here. We have the Broward County Intergroup information on how to get in touch with them, the website, so you can get like your medallions, you can get literature, lots of good stuff there. Also some volunteer opportunities. The AA's Got Talent, the Intergroup Banquet, and an ice cream social. That sounds great. So speaking of AA's Got Talent, it's time to get the routines ready because that's coming up in February. We got 5th Annual Gratitude Days tomorrow, this weekend. So there's all the speakers listed there. If you're going, have fun. Winterfest Dinner and Ice Cream Social. This is a really fun-looking announcement. Ugliest sweater contest. What? That sounds great. And karaoke. Oh my gosh. It will be good practice for AA's Got Talent. And that's it. You've got some ugly sweaters you can try out. Just a reminder that there is a 75-foot invisible no smoking and vape zone in the front of the church. We do have buckets set up down here, though, so if you could just make your way down to the end when you leave here, you can light up down there. The Boy Scouts are in the next room, so they're on the patch right now, so they don't really need the temptation. So thanks for your cooperation on that. And we meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be ready to begin at the sound of the bells. So thank you, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's session, and I'll pass speaker podcast online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study. And those whom wish to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you all Monday or Thursday. Godspeed.
Heart is heavy, soul is thirsty, body's aching. Desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Right. It doesn't matter.
circulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it. Shine, let it shine.
Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. See the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light
set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm about to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, my thumbs are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time outside my door. But never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Cause this broken man had traveled far and wide, drew the great divide through his own heart, yeah. Just about to start. So I face each day in a brand new way. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. The fog is lifted, see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night. And I dream now, yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright.
Oh man, going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.